John Reynolds, Reel 4. Now, we would talk, we'd come to the end of your, you'd failed the course at Manchester, so what happened to you next?
Because I'd failed, or decided not to proceed almost on that course, I was returned automatically to depot in Chatham. And
this is September 43.
Yes.
Your papers.
Yes. And when you get down there, it's something that had to be seen to be believed. The numbers of matlows milling around, and some of them doing undoubtedly very good jobs and doing them very well. Some of them, or a lot of them, are doing their best to find quiet corners that they could skive in and so on. But it takes a little while to get used to the rhythm of a depot and know what is going on.
What do you mean? Explain what you mean a bit more.
Well, you're given a spot to hang your hammock, and that's about all. There are loads and loads of lockers, and you put your kit in, and then you're that room, which is a fantastic area, is your base. Except when it comes to the day, you go down onto the parade ground, and I think you parade by barrack blocks, and the people that have got jobs at the end of the sort of muster, the people that have got jobs are discharged to their posts, and the rest of you sort of form a queue at the drafting office, and they are responsible for either putting you onto fresh courses or sending you to ships or whatever. And I think half the time they don't know quite what they've got. They shuffle papers and all sorts of things, and have a job in many cases to find your name anywhere. It was quite chaotic, I think, at times. But during the time that I was in there, I got on to different jobs. If you were left on the parade ground without a particular occupation, they'd come around, and in some cases they'd ask for volunteers. And the people who knew what the job entailed, and they felt like it, they volunteered. Now, some might have been cookhouse, some might have been general sweeping, all sorts of things. And one of the jobs that I got detailed for, I can't think that I volunteered, was the coal item.
Now, what did that entail?
We got issued with a particular set of overalls, I think. And we went down, marched down as a coaling party into the dockyard, where there was a shed put aside for the dockyard party, for the coaling party. And our job was to, I think, fill, but certainly handle, huge canvas sacks with probably a hundredweight and a half of coal. I would imagine it probably about a hundredweight and a half. It was far more than one person could handle. And we filled these things and put them on the back of a lorry. And then, however many of us there were, probably six to a lorry, we set off and we went round all the cookhouses in the depot, and the naval cookhouses outside the depot, for that matter, delivering the coal to the kitchens. And it was a pretty strenuous business to fill a lorry load of these things and then to get them onto the lorry, get them off the lorry, unload them into hoppers and this type of thing, and then back to the dockyard. But the big benefit of it was that you could depend on being back in the dockyard by 3 o'clock, and if you worked faster, you might even get back before that. And it meant that you were able to get into the depot early for early showers. It was one of the first times I came across the early bath item. And if you were early bath, then you were first in the line to catch the bus down to the train at Chatham Station and off to the Big Smoke, because that's where most of the people used to disappear to. You'd be on the train and up to London. Now, I'm not suggesting that I went regularly up to the Big Smoke. I didn't. But a couple of times I did.
Now, what would you do on visits to London? I mean, you're only a young lad still that you've seen about. You know,
yes.
What would you do?
No, that's a good question. I don't know what we did used to do.
Did you drink? So would you go to pubs? I mean, you know.
Not a lot. Not a lot. It does seem strange, really, that we used to do this. Now, we're talking about, what, September, October, aren't we?
43.
I don't know what I used to do in those days. Just wander around, and I can't remember anything specific that happened at that time.
Was there much bombing of either London or Chatham while you were there? I know Chatham got it sometimes, but it depends when you were there.
I remember. It's very difficult to remember, having been in Chatham later on, after the war was over in 45, 46, I was in Chatham. Obviously, there was no bombing then, so it must have been during this first visit. There were occasions when, rather than be in the barrack block, we used to be in the underground shelters. And the underground shelters at Chatham were fantastic.
In what way?
They were like an underground railway system without the rails, but they were very, very similar. And a lot of the documentation and the rest of it was kept down there, office type stuff. But there were also bunks and the rest of it down there as well. And I think occasionally we used to go down there. I can't remember it particularly, but certainly later in the war, when I think about the underground element, that was when I did go out from London. Now, it must have been during the war, though, not as late as. I'm sorry, I'm a bit lost here.
That's
for timing.
All right. That's a long time ago.
A bit lost here for timing. But I do remember being in London when there was fairly heavy bombing going on. And it was difficult to get anywhere to lay one's head. The normal hostels were full, and I did a time or two get put up at the Ormond Street Children's Hospital. We'd got children's decoration on the wall and this type of thing, just by the Westminster Abbey, and there I get put up. Got put up there, but when I wasn't there, I did on one occasion on a Friday night. Sorry, chaps, We're all full up. If you come back here at 11:30, we'll see that you get a bunk. And we went back there, and they put us on a bus and took us out to Clapham North by the Clapham Park, and we went down into the underground system there, which was the same as the, pretty well the same as the underground and so on. It may well be part of the underground system now, I don't know, but the Clapham North station was lined with bunks and the rest of it that were there for service personnel probably, and even bombed out people and the rest of it. But that meant that we weren't in the city during the bombing. I was never near an incident.
That's clear enough. And it must have been either that time or the previous time at Pembroke. I mean, it's difficult to...
It is.
Now, anything happened that you remember? You were there about a month, or anything else about your time there?
I wasn't on that coal detail for ever so long. For some reason, possibly because the different musters decided what people were doing, I became a runner for the, I think it must have been the dockyard superintendent. And that was quite an interesting job. I can't remember what I did, but it was interesting to be in his office, where there was one other Navy personnel who was on a permanent basis, and a Wren, who was his official assistant. And that was the first time I'd had anything to do with the office side. And just occasionally I used to run a message for him somewhere on the depot or roundabout. Apart from that, I can't remember a lot. I can remember seeing an odd Ensa concert in the Garrison Theatre.
Did you like them? I mean, because they're very famous Ensa concerts, but did you actually like them at the time? Or
yes, I did. I suppose it was a good break.
Were they well-known artists, or were they sort of the lower rank?
Probably the lower rank. I can't remember the names of anybody that I saw particularly, or the only person on an Ensa thing that I do remember, and that this comes very late in the Navy career, was when I was in Trincomalee, I think, and George Formby came on board. George and Beryl was with him. And by that time, and particularly in the sunshine of the Far East, he was as blind as a bat. And because he was keeping his voice for the concert he was going to do that evening on the depot ship, he didn't even give us a song. So that
we'll perhaps come back to that. But it's got the idea of it anyway. So what about your drafting? Was there a drafting procedure that they went through? Well, there was, but do you remember what happened when
No, I think you used to have to go and quote your name and number and so on a regular basis in the drafting office, and if anything had come up, then you were detailed to it. And my name came up there. When and so on, I don't know. It came up and I was allotted to a particular job number. Now, the job number was the opening of a boat number. And this meant that I had to go to the gunnery department, and I was given the job of probably the lowest of the low in the gunnery department. They were...
Where at, sorry?
Still in the Chatham barracks section. I became a gyro operator. There were.
So you hadn't had any gunnery training at all?
No, none at all.
So tell me what the gunnery department...
Well, the gunnery... The gyro section that I was to take over was one instrument in the gun laying turret or whatever of the boat that I was going to go to.
And it was it a compass or what was it? A gyro?
Yes, it was going to be a compass for working out the layoff of the different for firing instructions and the rest of it.
And was this specifically for a 4.7 turret?
No, it was for the plot, I imagine, as well as anything else. There were two, I think, leading seamen or petty officers in the going to be in the section.
Now, what was it to learn about the gyroscopic compass? What were they teaching you?
Well, I think my job really was to keep the bubble in the middle. it was something almost as simple as that. To do my best to keep the instrument on a level keel so that they, working their instruments for laying and so on, could operate and give the right information down to the plot. I'm a little bit doubtful now about what it was, and it was so important that in the end it came to naught. I think virtually it was scrub, but I did spend a little time on that.
That was while you were at Pembroke?
While at Pembroke.
What happened next then?
Well, eventually my name came up and I was given, as I say, a job number. Well, I followed up this job number that the original thing had been for, and all the people that had been assembled for that job number got together, and we got onto buses and went up to Chatham Station, down to wherever, Fenchurch Street or somewhere in London, and then we arrived in Newcastle on Tyne on the way to Wall's End.
This was a newly commissioned ship you were joining. Was she just being built or just being commissioned?
She was just being commissioned.
Ah, but was she a new ship?
She was a new ship. A new ship. The shipyard mateys were still on board. And we arrived to take her over. And
this is late October, 25th of October about.
I thought it was probably about the 10th of October.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure. It was certainly October. And I always think back, anybody that saw Louis Mountbatten on HMS Kelly, he stands up on the bit of a rostrum and he's got all his new crew round him and he gives them a little bit of a talk about this marvellous ship and all the rest of it and what we're going to do. This is what we had. We met our captain, introduced to our first lieutenant and all the rest of it, and we went on board what had now become HMS Virago. And we were... I don't know if it was at that first meeting the skipper or the first lieutenant had got a list of things. He wanted the names of people who were volunteering for different jobs. And the problem was that being new to this business, I didn't know what some of the jobs really entailed. And not being a fool, I didn't volunteer for too many things that I didn't know about. And this is rather, perhaps, where I lost my way. I could have volunteered for something that took more of my experience. I could have said, well, I've got a little bit of navigational experience from the ATC or from this operation, and therefore I could have been involved more in the plot, the people that controlled the battle and could see the full picture. But I didn't know about that at the time, and I suppose somebody who'd been trained for that had got the hand up or the name in first. So that I finished that first operation, that first chance of getting a pucker job without anything, as did the bulk of the people, of course.
And people, which means you just are an ordinary seaman.
I'm an ordinary seaman. And of course one remains an ordinary seaman until in the fullness of time they feel that if you learnt enough about your knots and you can throw a rope so that they can get the hawser ashore and all the rest of it, that you've sort of passed the test and so on, and you become an AB, an able seaman. And that didn't come for quite a while.
Now, can you give us a description? Now, there's a picture of it there. I mean, it's a destroyer. And it was in which escort group? You 26th?
We became the 26th flotilla.
Now, can you give us a sort of an idea of what kind of a ship she was as a destroyer for you, you know, getting on board her for the first time?
I think, really, I'd volunteered for this service, and as I'd volunteered,
and as destroyer service, or for the Navy?
Well, for the Navy.
Yeah, sorry.
And as I'd sort of turned down the opportunity to be a radar person and the rest of it, and I'd remained a seaman, I sort of felt probably that I'd got on board the very type of ship that I would have volunteered for.
Now, why? What was she like? Give us a description of her.
Well, I think the destroyers are the ships of the fleet that look sleek and businesslike. They've got the sort of prow on them that sort of looks for trouble and so on. You expect them to go fairly fast. They've got the equipment. They've got, in our case, we've got four 4.7 guns, single gun turrets. We've got a Bofors gun and so on, and depth charges. We were the full outfit, and therefore it looked as though it was going to be quite a lively job. And that's really what I'd volunteered for.
Now, they are small ships, though, aren't they? Or relatively small, I mean.
I think, I'm not sure if we're 1,900 tonnes or something. Comparatively small. Yes, comparatively small.
Was your first impression when you went below decks that it was small or cramped, or was it reasonably roomy for you?
Yes, I think they were fairly cramped. How we were sorted into messes, I don't know. But I was put into 13 mess, which was in the after crew apartments.
Now, can you describe that mess deck? Because people who haven't been on ships don't know what a mess deck is or what it's like. What was your number 13 mess deck like?
Well, it was what we call... You come off the main deck, you go through a very, very substantial door into the after housing, which contains on the left the kitchen, and then the first aid medical section, and then going down into the deck below is the metal stairway. And when you go down there, you come across a flight of three or four metal locker boxes that have got the backing, a backing rather like a pub place with sort of seats. You've got cushions on top of the lockers, and then the seats at the back, and they go to the corner, and from the corner then you've got a flight of these lockers going all the way up the side of the ship. At the end of our deck, of our mess. We've got a mess table. We've got a mess table that goes between the one lot of lockers and up the side, and it would seat probably five or six people on either side. The ones on the bulkhead side would be sitting on the tops of the lockers. The others would have a seat. And then after that, there's a similar mess. In our case, it was number 15. They got their own table and so on, and their own bits and bobs. And then
on... That's a separate room.
It wasn't a separate room. It's all in the same open space.
Right.
All in the same open space. Now, underneath the stair that you've gone down was the hamper locker. Well, it's not a locker, it's a keep. And there you put your locker. Your hamper rolls up containing your bedding into a roll that is tied up as neatly as you can get it. And about 10 or 12 of these hampers are stopped standing on their end in the lockers there. And then there was a cupboard. And in that cupboard, the mess, some of the mess, food and so on, was kept. And just at the side of the locker was a small fire, electrical fire, only 12 by 9 or something of this sort, the type of thing that one finds at home. And that was the only fire, as far as I remember, in the place to give one extra heat. Now, around the corner, was very difficult to just explain, but we've got 13 mess and 15 mess. If you carry on along the bulkhead at the back of there, on the right you'll find the next mess, and that was another mess, but that contained torpedo men and one or two other types of people, and also the sick berth attendant. And then in the corner coming back to form the square, the other side, as it were, to 13 mess of the stairway, was a small cabin which was occupied by a couple of petty officers and a leading seaman and so on. And there was the coxswain and one of the petty officer, one of the chief watchkeepers and so on. So there was there must have been 50 or 60, 50 perhaps, people in that mess area, the complete area.
Yeah,
yes. And only the one small place with the petty officers and so on was separated off.